Okay, are you ready up the back? Okay, cool. So let's get started. So today we're going to talk about sending push notifications to both Windows 8 and Windows Phone 7 devices using Windows Azure. Bit of a long title. I changed the title around a bit from what it says in the guide just to be more reflective that we are working with Windows 8 and Windows Phone 7. My name's Nick Harris. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft. I specialize in Windows Azure. The picture up there is a picture of me and my coworker. We've sort of been working there for a while. He's been there longer than me in Redmond, which pretty much gets no sunlight. So I use him as a guide, I guess, to figure out how long I've been at Redmond and how long it is until I'm considered a guru. So I'm still a few years away before I get like that. You can follow me on Cloud Nick, and I do blog. It's been a couple months, but I should be starting to blog quite heavily on this sort of stuff that you're seeing soon. So that's nickharris.net. So let's kick off. Today, we're going to review live tiles, and these are live tiles for Windows 8. So the majority of the session, probably about maybe 45 to 55 minutes of it, will be specifically on Windows 8, and we'll close out with about 10 minutes of Windows Phone 7. I'm going to take you on a deep dive into the Windows Push Notification Service, which is a service that's used by Windows 8 applications to receive those live tiles or toast notifications. We'll step right through the life cycle of a notification and how that service is used. We'll go down to the protocol level so you can see how auth is done, how you compose the payload to push the notification out, and then we'll sort of level up a bit into, I guess, an abstraction that I've built on top of that, and that's in the form of the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows 8. And its purpose is to allow you to essentially build out solutions very fast. So it's going to give you a great jump start in terms of not having to go down low level and deal with, you know, your HTTP requests, setting your headers, generating XML payloads. I've done all that work for you. And finally, you'll leave with examples of how you can build out your push notification services for your applications, being in Azure, but also enable them on the client side. So let's cut across here. So today I'm actually using an extended monitor on the Win8 machine. I've got a slight driver thing that I haven't fixed yet, but let's cut across. So I may have a little bit of switching difficulty because I'm sort of working off this down here. But this, as you've probably seen in the keynote this morning, and you said in the room here that not many of you have actually installed the Win8 developer preview, this is this new start screen, and chances are, I guess, that this is probably the most prominent feature that looks new and defining for Windows 8, particularly if you're coming from Windows 7. So what you can see here is we've got a whole bunch of tiles. And we've got tiles that are square, we've got rectangular tiles, we've got tiles that are alive, and we've also got tiles that are just static. Now, I'm not sure if any of you guys attended the build in September last year where Win8 developer preview was announced. And I'm not too sure if you've perhaps watched an online session, but Jensen is one of our fellows at Microsoft, and he essentially defined the following. And it was applications, you know, historically we've used icons to represent them. And while they're great, you know, for doing that, they're sort of not quite what's going to be around in the future. What instead in Windows 8, what we want to use is live tiles, and they're going to make your applications shine. So even just looking at this screen at the moment, we can see that we do have live tiles that are actually alive, but we've also got static tiles. But they're still, I guess, much better than, you know, the older Windows 7 type icons. So we can convey a lot of information in them. And that's what this session is about how to light up this display. Now, this is also going to be the new entry point for your application. So if you're out there developing applications, you really need to take advantage of this. You should be thinking about how can you deliver up-to-date and relevant content from your application to these tiles to draw your users back in. So these are forming a gateway to your application. So when you're developing it, you really need to consider carefully how you're going to do this. And if you sort of contrast it with the tiles that aren't live, you can see that as you know, someone that's just observing the UI here, you're sort of more drawn to those tiles that have relevant information that's up to date. So let's cut back across and we'll start talking about these. So Windows 8 live tiles. Now, the live tiles are actually made come to life using push notifications. Now, the good thing about push notifications and live tiles is your application does not actually need to be running to have that updated content on your start screen. So the way we achieve this is we utilize the Windows push notification service. But before we get into that, I'd like to just, this is just a slide, this isn't a real screen, that's why it's not animated. I'd like to go through the different templates that are available for you when you're thinking about how can you control what your application live tile is going to look like. So for instance, the first thing that we've got is you can see that we've got square-based tiles. And these square tiles, you can push out updated images to them, if you so wish. We've also got the rectangular tiles. Now, as you've seen on the live start screen, there was several different animations there that you could utilize to present that data. And in this particular static screenshot here, you can see that we've got two different template variations of this, one being the image with the text across the bottom, and the other one being this one with the four lines of text. Now, the thing to note is between the live tiles, the badges, this is a badge here. It's an integer that you can push up on the screen. You can push up from 1 to 99 in there. It's good for notifying users that, hey, there's six new things in this particular case, perhaps six new photos of your children that have been uploaded. So we've got live tiles, badges, and we've also got toast messages. Now, that's three distinct types of notifications you can send to your devices, but what you need to realize is that you can only see a few of the very rich template types that you can control here on this screen. In total, between those three different notifications types, you've got over 40 template types, which means that with this rich templating support, you're pretty much going to be able to choose a tile format that's going to work well with your application. So, one point to note before we move on about toast notifications is that the live tiles are only present and visible when you're on the start screen. But toast notifications, on the other hand, they can surface up while you're in other applications. So let's say that you're in your email or you're in Word and someone sends you a toast notification from your particular application. They're going to come up in the bottom of the screen. So the one piece of guidance that we try to give there is ensure that when you're choosing when to send notifications to your users of your applications, that you do consider that they're interruptive. You don't really want your application to be the one that's perhaps sending too many toasts and interrupting the user all the time, because then they may go and uninstall it. So just as you're designing your application, if you choose to use toast, which can be quite useful, just ensure that you're using it in a way that's not perhaps going to be intrusive to the user. So to control all these and to send these notifications down to your Win8 application instances, we utilize what's called the Windows Push Notification Service. Now, the actual acronym for that, they've dropped the P, so when I talk through this talk today, you'll probably hear me referring to WNS a lot. It saves me a few words, and it means we can get through more. So WNS is the Windows Push Notification Service. So what I'd like to do now is give you a high-level overview of the workflow or life cycle that you have when you're sending a notification to a device. And it really boils down to three key steps. But before we start, I just want to call out the pieces that you as developers will need to develop and those pieces that Microsoft has developed for you. So over on the left-hand side here, we've got the Windows 8 platform. We've got two distinct things in there. We've got the blue Metro-style app. Now, that's the applications which you guys author. And we've also got the notification client platform. Now, that's something that's embedded within the OS for you. We've also, on the right, got more of our server-side services. So we've got a cloud service, and we'll go through what that's for shortly. But we've also got the Windows Push Notification Service, so WNS. Now, WNS is a free service. You don't need to pay anything to use it, so make use of it, make your applications light up. Now, all you really need to worry about as a developer is how your items in blue that you're authoring interact or interface with these items in green. And what we'll do is we'll step through the process that you'd go through in an application to do that. So first we'll do it very high level, but then I'm going to drill down into each particular step and show you the code and what essentially you need to do to make it work. So the first step, your application needs to request a channel URI. Now, channel URI just uniquely identifies one of those tiles on your start screen. And there's a WinRT API for that, and we'll look at that shortly. So the first step is request channel. Once you get that channel, you then push that channel up to your cloud service. So we call this the register phase. So you've requested a channel, and now you register it with your cloud service. Your cloud service will store that within, you know, whatever persistent storage mechanism you want to use until such a point in time that you want to send a notification. When you do, when your business logic that you've implemented up there decides it's time to send a notification, what you need to do is you need to auth and then push the notification to WNS. So this is a two-step process. You first need to authenticate against WNS, then you need to compose the XML payload for your notification, and then post it to that channel via WNS. WNS will then deal with delivering that notification to the notification client platform, and it will deal with surfacing that up on either your start screen or as a toast notification if that's the type you've chosen. The key point to note here is that that arrow in green and the surfacing of that tile notification, you don't really need to deal with or worry about the complexities of how that works. You just need to worry about, as I said, the way you interface with those two pieces at point one and point three. So what we'll do is we'll sort of drill into each of these key phases in a bit more detail, and then we'll look at the code for them, and then we'll start looking at some demos. So first step is request a channel URI. So if you might have noticed already on the start screen, we had sort of weather information there, we had stock information. Each of these tiles has a unique channel. An application can have multiple tiles pinned. So if you've got a weather application, you may have pinned multiple cities' weather forecasts to your start screen. And we'll see this in a little while when we go back to the start screen. Either way, each of these has a unique channel URI, and that means that you can uniquely target that with the notification. So you've got full control over which tile will be, you know, showing what information. We do recommend that when your MetroStyle app runs each time, that you do request a new channel URI, and this is because a URI can change, they can expire. So if you just, every time that application is launched by a user, just request a new one and post it up to your cloud service, then you're going to ensure, essentially, that your cloud service is not trying to post notifications to a channel that's expired. The default expiry for a channel URI is about 30 days, but irrespective of that, we say, let's just capture it every time the application runs, because it may be that your users may only jump back into your application every 15 days or so, so you need to take the opportunity when you can. The actual channel URI is generated by WNS. So the notification client platform here, when you call into WinRT to request that channel, the notification client platform will take care of going and talking with the Windows push notification service to get that channel. And the last thing to note here is that the actual channel URI is opaque to the app. And what I mean by that is your application doesn't really need to know anything else about it apart from its channel, a channel URI. You don't need to look at, you know, the query string that's on it or whatnot. You just need to take it and post it to your cloud service with some metadata that's associated to that. But let's go and look into this first step, and we'll dig into the code that you use to request a channel URI using the WinRT API. So this is a JavaScript example. The same namespaces exist in C# XAML. I've just chosen JavaScript here for simplicity. But because the namespacings were a bit long, I just sort of varred out the namespace at the top. But the key point to note here is on that second line, the push notification channel manager. So that's your point of call where you're going to go in and call this create push notification channel for application async method. So it's an extremely long and descriptive method name. But if you remember push notification channel manager, you're not going to remember to need that name because you'll have IntelliSense and you'll just be able to find it. But what this method does is that kicks off the call into that client notification platform to retrieve back that channel that's going to uniquely identify that tile. So because it's an async method, we need to wire up what's going to happen on the callback for that. So in this case, I've just wired up a function here that accepts ch, and ch is just representative of the channel that's going to be injected back in when this returns. Now, the channel object which you receive has two properties on it, a channel URI and a channel expiry. So the channel URI is that unique channel that identifies the tile, and the expiration time is when that channel will be invalid, and that's the approximate 30 days after you first requested it. Now, what does a channel URI look like? So this is what a channel URI looks like. And again, it's just a URI, but you keep that opaque to the application and just post it to your service. So the very last step of this method, as you can see, is at the bottom here, update channel URI. And this update channel URI is where you can then push that channel URI up to your cloud service as part of step two. So if we hit next here, we can have a look a bit deeper into step two. So we've successfully done the request channel URI. We've utilized the WinRT APIs. They're available to both your JS and C# applications. And now we've retrieved back that channel. Now we need to do something with it. We need to push that up to our cloud service such that we've got it at, and we're going to be able to use it later on. So perhaps I'll use a weather application as an example for the context as we move through the rest of this. So our weather application did get that channel, and now that particular channel was for a tile, perhaps, for the weather in Amsterdam. So what we're going to do is we're going to register that channel with our cloud service. So key point to note is that you should ensure that that call where you're pushing this channel URI up to your service is both secure and authenticated. So what I mean by that is there should be some authentication mechanism that's going on to stop other users trying to push data into your services, but also point-to-point you should be using SSL to push that channel up. You don't want people sort of intercepting your channels and trying to take them and do, you know, things that you don't want them doing with them. So register the channel with your cloud service. Now, once your cloud service retrieves it internally, you need to go and store that somewhere. So if you're using Windows Azure, you can consider using table storage or SQL Azure, and we'll talk about those a bit later on. But the one key piece of information to note is store some app-specific context around that particular channel URI. So in the case of the weather application, the app-specific context would be this is for Amsterdam. So I'd be pushing up a little sort of JSON payload that says, this is my channel URI. It's for Nick Harris, and it's for the city Amsterdam, and it expires on a particular date. And then that's something that your cloud service can use to send out updates. So this is where we come into the business logic. So the next step is you then implement business logic that's specific to your application. So following on with our weather service application, what our cloud service would be doing is it would be sitting there and polling a national weather service API. And it may be polling it for Amsterdam, it may be polling it for Redmond, USA, it may be polling it for Sydney, Australia. But what it can do now that we've got this channel URI and app-specific metadata stored in our persistent storage mechanism there, we can say there's a snow warning or something like that or a change in weather forecast for Amsterdam that we've just detected from the National Weather Service. Now, what we can do is we can query to find all of those channels that have been, you know, pushed up to our cloud service that are for Amsterdam. Then we can iterate through them and push out a tile update. So to push out that tile update, we have to do several things. But before we do that, let's just look at what that piece of client code, the function that we've seen at the end of step one, would look like. So again, this is in JavaScript, and we can see that our update channel URI, in this case, we've passed in the channel URI and expiration. It's posting to a REST-based service to register the channel. In the payload, I've sort of chopped it down a little bit just so I can fit it on the slide. But as you can see, we're posting the expiry, the URI. Again, we may have a field in there called city if we're doing a weather app that has Amsterdam. And then we just create this web request to go off and post that information up. One thing to notice here that we're doing in this is you could post the data up in, say, XML. You could post it up in JSON. But one thing you should consider when you're building out your applications, particularly with Windows 8, is you're going to have an extremely large or possibly an extremely large user base, depending on how popular your application is. So this is an OS that's going to be going out globally. So one thing you need to think of is these applications that are talking to your cloud-based services are going to need to send quite a bit of information back and forth to them. Now, while it seems like just a simple line of code down here, by choosing JSON to post our message up or as our serialization format, we're actually saving on a huge amount of bandwidth. And what this means is our service can then support a lot more information coming up just by choosing or changing our serialization strategy. In actual fact, I did a little test and I went and used an OData service or a service that's returning data in the OData protocol, a WCF REST service, and also a JSON service. And I found that JSON was 13 times more efficient in terms of the data that was being posted back and forth than the original OData service. Now, what that means is that you're going to have potential cost ramifications that you're saving 13 times as much money because you may not need to scale out for as many instances to serve the same user base size. So this is how, at the end of step one, that we registered that channel with our cloud service. So let's look at the next step, which is to authenticate and send our notification. So there's I guess, sort of two or three main parts which you could say here. The first one is you need to utilize OAuth2 to authenticate your cloud service to WNS. The next step, once you receive back a token from WNS, is to go and compose that HTTP request that is going to post your XML notification payload to WNS for delivery. Now, as I said, across Toast, Tile, and Badge notifications, there's over 40 different template types, or variants, I should say. And that means that each variant has a different serialization sort of format. It's very well defined and very well documented, but if you're dealing with a lot of different template types, then you'll see in 5 or 10 minutes how we can make this an easy process. But essentially, authenticate, then post the notification to WNS. So long as the authentication process has gone well and your XML payload is correct in terms of its form, it will then be pushed to the notification client platform and then surfaced up on the start screen if it's a Tile or Badge, or surfaced up if it's a Toast. So let's have a look at how you deal with this authentication portion of that third step. So the first thing you need to do is to register your application up on this website. And this website is, I've got the link at the very end of the deck, but if you want to take it down now, it's https://manage.dev.live.com/build. But this wizard essentially takes two things. One is just an identifier name for your application, and you'll see where they come from a bit later on when we get into the demo. And the second item is a publisher name, and that comes from the package manifest of your application. So that's the stuff that you push in to get your OAuth credentials. Once you've pushed them in, you receive this. Now, this is the three key pieces of information that any application that wants to push notifications using WNS will have to provide. So the first one is actually a package name. Now, this piece of information is taken and put into your client application, and that establishes a relationship between your actual client app instances versus your cloud-based service that's authenticating and pushing in WNS. Essentially, what it does is it makes sure that it's your cloud service that's pushing to your application, and it's not someone else's cloud service that's trying to push to your applications. So we put the first piece of information in the client application, and then we utilize the client secret and package security identifier to do that authentication step against WNS. So let's have a look at what that looks like. So the authentication request against WNS, and again, what I'm doing here is I'm just looking at it at the protocol level, and this is because I realize that not all developers here in the room may be, say, C-sharp developers or PHP developers. So if we look at the base protocol first before looking at a language-specific implementation, it means everyone will be able to walk away understanding how to do this at the sort of most raw or basic level. So this is just a HTTP POST request, and we need to post to login.live.com/access token. And the content needs to be URL encoded, so that's a very important step. If you don't do that, your authentication may be failing, and in that particular case, sometimes it's not apparent, so just keep that in mind. Now, the next two pieces of information that are important are those two keys from the portal which you've seen in the prior slide. So this is the body, and we have a grant type of client credentials. We have the client ID, which is URL encoded, and that's straight from the portal. And then we have a client secret, which we post in there. And that's pretty much all you require to authenticate against WNS. So the authentication step, if that was a successful key set, will return back a HTTP 200 OK. And within that, you're going to have an access token. And that access token then is utilized in every subsequent request that you're going to send to WNS with a notification for your channels. So let's have a look at what that looks like. So let's just recap here. We've done step one. We've requested a channel on the client. We've had that client perform step two, which is post that channel or register that channel with your cloud service. We've kicked off the first phase of step three, which is to authenticate against WNS. And now this is the final push towards WNS. Now, you can see this here is that channel URI that we had well back at the start in step one that was returned from those WinRT APIs. So our post is actually posting to WNS, which is at, in this case, db3.notify.windows.com. The actual token there is the identifier for that tile, and that's unique globally. So we perform this post to our channel, but we need to set a few things here first. So in this particular case, we're going to try and do a badge notification. So the content type for your notification payloads is always text/XML, but you need to specify what type of notification you're sending so WNS can then look at the payload and ensure that it's correct for the type that you're sending. So in this case, we're sending a WNS badge, but there's also WNS tile and WNS toast. The very important piece here that links us back to the authentication step is that authorization token. So we set that to be the authorization header, the bearer, text is there, but then that specific token that we've got in our response from WNS initially is then inserted there like that. The final piece of the post here to push the notification is your actual notification. So I've utilized a badge because that's the most simple type of notification that you're going to go out and generate. Tiles can be more complex depending on, you know, what kind of tile template you've chosen. Some may contain up to 5 images and multiple lines of text if it's a peak notification. So as far as understanding the concept here is, the payload is just a serialized piece of XML that matches your notification type. So if we were to send this one, we would actually get a notification down in the bottom right there which just updates that to say 34. So end of the day, it all boils down to a simple post, but there's quite a bit to understand. So the last thing you get back from WNS is a response. So we've authenticated against it, we've taken that header, we've placed that in the authorization header of our HTTP post to send our notification, but WNS is going to tell us a little bit of information back after we send this notification to it. So the key point to note is that when WNS returns back a 200 OK, that doesn't mean that the notification was delivered to your end user. What that means is WNS has received that notification, and it's going to try and deliver it when it can. The reason why the 200 OK indicates that is because a device may be offline, so it may be impossible to deliver that notification at that point in time. So saying 200 OK just allows your application to say, OK, well, the notification has hit the next step, which is WNS, and at some point in time that will hopefully be delivered to our client application. Now, there are some additional headers that are returned here by default, the notification status. If you are having any trouble with WNS, they do provide these other headers, which is a message ID and a debug trace number. So that's quite useful if you do need to talk to anyone about any sort of problems that you're having. But you can also request additional headers. So when you form that post that you send to WNS, there's a lot of different headers you can set, and I kept them quite straightforward in the prior slide, so we didn't complicate things. But what you can actually do when you build your service is you can say, you can set a request for status header. That request for status header can then return back to you device status. So that would then perhaps have in this response that the device is offline. And what you can do with that is you can start to make your service that's up in the cloud, a lot smarter. So let's say that I tried to send a notification and I set the request for status header and it returned back saying that device is offline. I can make my service a bit smarter by perhaps implementing an exponential backoff for sending notifications to that device, because it may be that his device doesn't power up for, you know, another day, maybe his device doesn't power up for another week, it may be that his device is broken and that channel's never going to be valid anymore. So by initially when you start and build these things, you don't really need to do it in, you know, a way where you're taking these things into consideration. But if you want to start, you know, refining and optimizing your solutions, this is one way which you can do that, and it's going to make, I guess, the amount of load that your service has to deal with when you're dealing with scales of millions of user a lot better. So that's the response. So when I was sort of, I got access to the Win8 developer preview bits a little bit before it was made public, and I was actually working with a whole bunch of interns that were there, and they were developing the applications that you see on the developer preview today. So that weather application and the news application and Twitterama, all of these applications were developed by interns. And in actual fact, these interns were in teams of three. So they had no prior experience with WinRT, and they had no prior experience with Azure. And over 12 weeks, they were able to go out and deliver these scalable services with their application, in 12 weeks. So it's quite amazing. But what it really, I guess, says is that the WinRT APIs and Azure and its scalability and, easy programming model is quite achievable for anyone to go out and build some really cool apps quite fast. But what we've done is we've gone and looked at this protocol. And it's been, we've looked down right down at the HTTP request response level. And we sort of found that some of the interns perhaps, you know, whilst they could understand and learn how to do this, that it wasn't the most efficient way for them to get solutions up and running, you know, in that period of time fast. They may have been sort of a bit bogged down writing that raw sort of code. So what I did was I created this Windows push notification recipe. And what this is it's a managed API that, I guess, abstracts the developer a level above that raw HTTP request level. So it means that you're going to have a nice defined object model that you can utilize to compose these notifications, to do your authentication, and then to send this serialized template. And all the while, you really don't need to understand, you know, the XML serialization strategy and all this sort of stuff. You just set properties. So let's have a brief look at this. So let's look at what the authentication code of that third step would look like using the WNS recipe. So this package is available on NuGet. It's called WNS recipe. Have we got any developers in the room that are NuGet developers? Or that have utilized a NuGet package? So I think Scott added a NuGet package in his keynote today, whereby he just sort of opened the package manager console and then typed in service bus and pulled in the Azure service bus recipe. They're quite a useful thing. So NuGet is a mechanism of delivering composable blocks of information, or not information, but I guess code, into your applications that you're going to be able to utilize. So in this particular instance, you'd pull down the NuGet recipe, that would inject that into your application, and then you can start programming using that. You don't need to copy a whole bunch of code out of files or whatnot. It just pulls in the assembly, pulls in some documentation that tells you how to use it, and it also may pull in optionally some source depending on the package. But this is that recipe. So to utilize it, we go and use this namespace. Now, if we want to deal with the authentication step against WNS, rather than composing that HTTP request, I just provide a simple WNS access token provider that you can new up and pass in those two credentials that you got from the portal at the very start. So that's pretty much the authentication step. Behind the scenes or under the hood, it does actually have to send that request, but that request will be sent when you're trying to send that notification. So let's have a look at that. So again, using the push notifications namespace, we're going to new up a toast notification in this case. So again, we're just nice little object model. It accepts that token provider from the prior slide, and that's how we go and get that token for this particular notification. The actual token provider implementation, once it does request back that first token, it caches it. So if you're trying to implement a scalable service and you just keep using this same token provider instance, it means that every time you send a notification, you're not going to be authenticating every time. You're just going to, the first notification you send, it'll do the authentication step, and then subsequent requests, if you use this same token provider, it'll just use the cache authorization token. So the second step, after we new it up, is we need to direct it to a channel URL, or channel URI. And here, again, it's the same channel URI that we had returned in our client application that we pushed up to our cloud service, and that this is, a simplified example, but obviously you would be pulling that channel from your data store. But there it is. You just set a property for that. You then specify the actual type of notification that you want to send. So in this case, the toast, we're sending a toast, but we've got, I think there's about 12 different template variants for toasts. And in this case, we want to send toast image and text too. So rather than you having to figure out how the XML payload works, what I've done here is given you a simple enum that will tell this toast notification class how to serialize that notification when it sends it. The next step here is to set the image. So this particular template type for toast requires an image. And the image, you can set it to be some public image that's accessible over the web. So what will happen is when that notification is eventually received, it needs to be able to reach out and pull that resource down so it can be shown. And in this case, we're using Windows Azure Blob Storage as our space for storing this notification image. The next step in this particular template for Toast Notifications is to specify the text. So Toast Image and Text 02 requires two lines of text. And again, you're just passing in a simple list of string. Depending on the toast type that you select, you'll just pass, you know, three lines of text or one line of text. And again, all of these different template types are very well defined on the Win8 Dev Center. So the final step is just to send it. So again, toast.send, that will go out and that will do the auth. It'll generate your payload. It'll set all the headers appropriately and it will send it off to WNS. And then the HTTP response that comes back, it'll go and extract all the information from that, such as, you know, the device status, those trace and message IDs, and I'll put it into a nice little class with properties on for each of those called notification send result. So you can react to what's coming back there as well. But the key thing I'd like you to take away, probably even for this entire talk, is that this recipe will make it a lot faster for you to start developing these things. So it's definitely something to take advantage of. unless you are developing something where you really want to get back down to that raw HTTP level and build out your own HTTP requests and such. I've done a reasonable job of making sure that it's fast and efficient in doing this and serializing it and such. So you should be fine with this to get a head start. Do take that away. It saves you time, as you can see. All of these complex things which we sort of walked through, you really don't need to know much more about it now using this because you've got this object model here. So that's the notification which we would have received for that particular toast that we just sent. I have no idea who this guy is. I think he works at Microsoft. So let's summarize this and then we'll jump into a live demonstration of some more of the tooling that I've built out on top of this. So we requested a channel URI using the WinRT APIs. We posted that channel to our cloud service, and we stored it until such a point of time that we wanted to send a message. When we determined that we wanted to send a message, we utilized the WNS recipe to perform the authentication and push of that notification. The Windows push notification service then dealt with delivering that notification to the client, and the notification client platform dealt with servicing that notification on your start screen. So, the one thing which we didn't really drill into was the internals of how that cloud service worked. We've seen the client code that's sort of pushing up that channel URI with the metadata. But while I worked with the interns, it's pretty apparent that everyone who tries to build out this particular solution to send out live tile updates, they're going to need to implement pretty much the exact same pattern. The service has the same requirements. And what we did was we looked at those and then we decided that we'd go and build this for them. So it's just a component that they can pull into their applications. It's just another building block and it's going to make things a lot faster for them to use. So the things that that service needed to support was it needed a support web-based API for registering that channel URL. It needed some persistent storage mechanism to store that channel URI until you determined that it's time to post to it. And we also needed somewhere to store the tile and toast images such that you could reference them publicly on the web. With Windows Azure, you've probably got a reasonable grounding in Windows Azure from the keynote with Scott Gu, and also if you attended his session just prior to this. But we utilized Windows Azure Compute to implement this. So we used a web role, and that provides us full IIS support. And we used a WCF web API for the channel URI registration. We also tagged in an ASP.NET MVC website that essentially allows someone who's just getting used to learning how to use notifications to use an MVC-based UI to select the different notification types, be it toast, badge, or tile, but also select those templates and then inject a notification into WNS via a nice simple UI using the WNS recipe. Did you have a question there? Did you put your hand up? No? Okay, cool. So the last piece in terms of the technology choice that we utilized Windows Azure Storage. We selected table storage for our channel URI. So that's our massively scalable storage for essentially structured data. It's not relational data. Table storage is not like a relational database. It's more like NoSQL. So you can serialize entities to it and pull them back out. But in terms of relationships, there's no concept of a foreign key constraint. You could well build something out like that into your solution to try and do that. But if you really have a solution that needs to sort of be doing sort of complex joins between your entities and such, then you're better off either serializing that whole block with the nested relationships on its own or utilizing SQL Azure. We also then selected blob storage to deal with storing those tile and toast images publicly on the web. So I think it's time for a demo. So I'll just... this machine managed to go to sleep here. So what I'm going to demonstrate here is, I guess, the next layer of tooling that I built on top of that WNS recipe. So the WNS recipe provides one simple abstraction, but that's just for the auth and send, but it doesn't really cover... Sorry, this thing is not responding. Let me just cut back here for a sec while I try and fix this. I might just reboot this. Sorry. I've only really got one international adapter for power, so I tend to have this issue whereby the screens are powering down. But what I'm going to do in this demo for you is I'm going to show you the next layer of abstraction, which is going and building a toolkit that provides tooling in Visual Studio for you to generate these client solutions, be it your Windows Metro-style app that can deal with the WinRT API, but also to generate that whole cloud-based service that deals with the registration and push. And this is something which we provided the interns, and then they took that and used that as the grounding for building out their solution for these applications, and it really saved them a lot of time and allowed them to deliver quite quickly on their products. So, all right, I think I'm ready to log in here. Almost. So, sorry, this is not really great. I'm running sort of a dual screen setup here, and it's just a little bit difficult to switch between. Okay, I think it's nearly there. It's firing up again. Might need some power or something as well. Okay. Right, so while we wait for this, are there any questions? Anyone? Is anyone considering building out an application for Windows 8? Yeah? A couple people. So out of interest, what's your language of choice? So far when I've been building these toolkits, I've been implementing them using... I started out using JS, HTML5, but I've now added support for C# XAML. But ideally, as I move forward, I'm going to have to keep building these out in one language first and then followed by the other one. So could I get a show of hands of who's, you know, the C# XAML type developers? Right, so I should definitely be building it in that first, by the looks of things. And anyone that's HTML5 JS? Okay. All right. So what I'm going to do here, and sorry, let me cut this across. This is a dual screen issue. Right. The demo gods aren't sort of shining on me today. So let me just try and launch this from here. So I'm going to open up VS 2010 here, and that's going to be what we utilize to build out our server-side portion of the solution. And I'm also going to show you the client side, which we're going to use Dev 11 for. Now, you may be wondering, for instance, why are we using VS 2010 and VS 11? The reasoning behind this is at the moment, the Windows Azure tools haven't been merged into the trunk for VS 11. Obviously, eventually they'll come, but until then, we need to utilize the two separate tools to build out the new Metro-style apps and also... the server-side portion of the solution. So the key point to note here is wherever I'm using, could someone from the tech come down and just adjust the screen because it's not showing properly on here, it's sort of cutting off a bit. But anyhow, so wherever you see up the top, VS 11, that's going to be our client, and wherever you see up the top, administrator, that's when we're dealing with the server-side portion of the code. So let's get started on this. So I'll just do a file new project. And since we're C# XAML developers, I'll choose Windows Metro style app for C# XAML. Now, as most of you said, you haven't installed the tools or looked at them yet. By default, what you get is you just get these templates here for building your applications. And what the toolkit installs for you is this additional option here, and this is where we have the tooling and automation. So I'm going to select a notifications template, and this is the Windows 8 toolkit for Windows Azure. And the first thing that I pop up is essentially a dialog, and this is part of a wizard that helps collect that information that's required for the authentication. So we're building out the client app here. So as you recall in the deck, what we had to do is we had to go to manage.live.com/build. So I'm just going to bring up iExplore here. So manage.dev.live.com/build. This will be up on the last slide. If you are doing this and you have any problems, please feel free to email me, and I'll answer them, and we'll get you sort of up and running fast. Sorry, my eyes aren't 20/20 vision, and I'm coding or writing on the screen down the bottom there. Right. So that is a bad password. Oh, gosh. Do you guys mind, is it rude if I turn my screen so I can just look up there? Is that okay? Thanks. All right, that's better. I can actually see that. Okay, I think that's right. All right, so here we go. So now we're going to log into the portal, and we're going to see that first screen which we started out with. And I'm going to scroll down here, and this is where we need that package display name and such. So I'm just going to flick back to our Metro-style app, and because I'm a lazy developer, and I assume there's some others out there, what I've done is I've just put something that's going to copy that information for this app into the clipboard for you, and then it just becomes a simple paste operation. So the first one was just the name of the application that we're generating, and the second one is the publisher display name. And I'll show you after we generate the client where I've pulled that from, because if you're not going to use the wizard here and you're going to start with a blank application template, you'll need to know where to get this key, because if you don't do it correctly, then your notifications won't end up being delivered. So now we've got those three key pieces of information which we required. So if we flick back here now, we can just paste that guy in there and hit next. Now, this step is around authenticating your service, and for this particular case, I'm not going to do that because we have about 20 minutes left. So the last piece here is I'm just collecting a little bit of information to package into that payload that we're pushing up. So if you recall, this was the app-specific metadata for your application. So this may be perhaps you'd put in a city identifier or such, but I just use this to identify which channel I'm using. Nick, and we'll just say that, Nick at Tech Days. So now what I'm doing, I'm going out and I'm actually generating that solution. I'm utilizing a few NuGet packages which you can go off and utilize in your applications, but they'll be all documented on my blog. But for now, what we need to know is that we've pulled down and configured our client solution. So if I double click here on the package APEC manifest, this is where you define the configuration for your app. And if I come down here, I've done a few steps which aren't in the default file new project for a blank app. And what it is essentially I've added a wide logo, so that allows you to do the wide tiles. Otherwise, your application would just be stuck on a square tile. And I've also gone and specified that the application can receive Toast notifications. Now, again, if you're starting from the blank template and building this out yourself, the other piece of information you really need to know about is the packaging. So this is where that ID from the Live Connect portal was injected. And the actual bit which we provided to the first step was this publisher ID here. And typically, it's just a CN equal to your username. So that's the client. So let's build the service. So again, this is now VS 2010, and what we've got here is the same thing. I've installed. When you install the toolkit, it installs this template so you can go out and generate that service for registration, but also the UI to send out notifications. So I'm going to hit OK on that. The first step of the wizard then requests, you know, do you want to utilize a real blob or a real Windows Azure storage account? So this is your storage account name and key, or do you want to emulate that all locally on your dev machine? So typically most people in the development cycles will just use the emulators because it's all local and they're not pushing data up into the cloud. They'll go and push it up into the cloud later on, which is just a simple config change. Now, the next step here is to actually go and pull those next two pieces from your WNS Live Connect portal. So let's make sure I get all of that. If you sort of double-click on this, if you do a triple-click, you'll get all of it. Sometimes, if you miss a little bit, the authentication step's going to fail and will return a 403. So the first thing you should really do if you're getting a 403 when posting is just double-check that you've pulled these secrets all out properly. So we're going to drop this in there. And we'll drop the next one in. In this particular case, the wizard does actually remove the white space if you don't want to worry about deleting it off. So now what I'm doing is I'm going off and generating the server solution. So you can see this NuGet package, it's installing the WNS recipe plus a whole bunch of other NuGet packages to build out our server-side solution. So the cool thing about this is, if you don't really want the bloat of using this far new project experience, you can pull just those packages into your application that are relevant for what you're trying to do. So you don't necessarily need to use this as a starting point, although it's a good way to start learning. If you've already got a solution or a cloud service that you've developed, you can utilize the NuGet packages to pull in this functionality without really having to sort of go and do a lot of manual things. So we've got our cloud project generated, and we've also got an MVC project here. And if I scroll down in the references, you can see that we've pulled in the WNS recipe. So the WNS recipe is that NuGet package which we talked about, and if we expand out the classes here, you can see that you've got, you know, your badge notification, your tile and toast, and then you've also got the response, the notification status, and we've got that WNS access token provider. On top of that, you can see that there is a huge amount of different tile notification templates that you can utilize. So what we're going to do is we're just going to spin this up so you can see what you get out of the box. So we'll spin up the services. So what this is doing is it's just going off and starting the Windows Azure storage and compute emulators locally on the machine. What this means is that you're emulating it all locally apart from the WNS component. I won't go into the... If you need to look at the Azure emulators, they're all available under here, and you can show them like that. But for the sake of time, let's just move on with spinning up the client. So we've just seen the services website spun up then. So let's spin up our client application. And now I need to switch the screens across. Which doesn't seem to be working here. Right, it's not great. My actual my button on the start screen, which swaps them across, isn't working. It's horrible. Okay, let's all right. Do not do this at home. We'll see if this will work for us. Let's go here and go to Explorer. And let's end this guy. And then let's go File. It is a developer preview. Hit OK. Now let's see if we can switch our screen back around. Okay, that's better. Right. So let's see if we can switch to the client app. Stop. Start this guy. Hopefully it'll pop up on the right screen. There we go. So sorry about that. So what we've got is a simple test application here that you can use to drive that first step, which is request the notification channel using the WinRT API. We've generated all this code for you. and then register that up with our cloud service that's running on localhost. So I just hit that, and that's done those two steps, and it's also showing you that channel URI in the UI there. Now, if I jump back over and we go to the actual services, what we can do here is we can log in and we can start sending notifications. So the username and password is all in the documentation that's provided when you download the toolkit. But let's jump into the push notifications here. So we'd like to get to the WinPhone stuff. So you can see I've got several different channels that I've pushed up here, and each one identifies a unique tile. But let's use the one which we did in the example here. And I'm just going to send a... let's start with a toast notification. Let's use this and do a test. So we've specified an image and a test, and I think it's going to show up on this screen here, so I'm going to have to quickly flip it again. Let me just make sure I'm going to do that right. Okay. Okay, so it was accepted by WNS. Is it showing up anywhere? Not quite yet. Okay, let me try that again. Oh, there it is. Okay, cool. had me a bit worried there for a second. So that's one particular template, and that takes image and text. But what you can see is there's plenty of different variants. If you just wanted one that perhaps has two lines of text, you'd choose the appropriate template and then just send it out. So that's a toast notification, but we've also got these other two types which we talked about, and that's a tile and a badge. So we'll just do one tile notification here. Again, I'd suggest that if you're building these solutions is that you come in here and you explore the different options that you've got. So let's just go and put some of the guys that are presenting on Azure content here today. Scott in there, and we'll put the Windows Azure logo. And this is a peak image. So what this does is it peaks some text. And you'll notice that I'm also sending a square tile in the background as well. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. So let's wait for this to send. So it's sent OK. Let's kick back to here. And there's our notification being popped up on the screen. Now, the start screen here, to make sure that all your notifications aren't popping and peaking at the same time, it randomizes when that's going to happen. So in this particular case, you can see that the peak has popped up. And when it determines it's time to push it back down, it's going to do so. But that's just so everything doesn't move at once. But that's that peak image collection 01 template, which is sort of cool. I think it'd be useful for Facebook-style applications or photo sharing applications and that sort of thing, because you could utilize it to draw someone back into your app. So that's tile. So let's just go back and look at the last one here, which is badge. And let's send a badge. So you've seen throughout the deck that we just looked at the standard int-based ones, which is the 1 to 99, but you've also got these images available. They're called glyphs, and we can use perhaps, say, a new message glyph if you've got some kind of messaging application. And we'll send that one down, and let me just flip back to the start screen here. And you'll see down the bottom right here we've had it's probably not the best on this particular tile, but you can see the little message there. It's a bit clearer against that background. But there you go. So that's what a glyph is, and there's several different types of glyphs as well. So there's something to make use of as well. And that's basically it. That's the three different notification types that you've got available to you. But there are multiple template types, and there's a very rich selection there for you to play with. Using the toolkit here is probably the fastest way you can get started. So I'm just going to cut back over here and we'll sort of walk through the rest of the deck at speed. So push notifications with Windows 7. The process is almost identical. You have your client application. It needs to request a channel. It needs to register that channel with your cloud-based service. And you need to push that notification to that channel via a service. Now, with Windows Phone 7, it's not WNS that you're using. You're using another service called MPNS. And as a result, the implementation is slightly different, and there's no authentication step that you need to worry about with Windows Phone. So let's have a quick look at the different types of notifications you can send to Windows Phone. The first one is a toast, and a toast can have a title, some content, and it can also have a parameter. The parameter is useful if you want to inject some kind of parameter back into your application when someone presses on the toast, and that means your application can perhaps have a command that's sent into it. So I may be clicking on a notification that says, you know, free ice cream or something like that. I click on it, and the command has ice cream, and I'll go, and your application can process that and perhaps pull up a different page to normal. So that's toast. So tiles in WinPhone 7, we've got two types of tiles. We've got a front side of the tile, and we've got the back of the tile. And on both, you can specify a count, a background image, and a title. So that's the front, and this is the back, the same again. And then we've got raw notifications. So this particular one we didn't have in Windows 8. Now, a raw notification is a way to send like just a data payload to your application from, you know, your cloud service without the application actually having to sort of call into it. So you're pushing information rather than having a device-initiated request. But with raw notifications, they can only really come in when your application is running in the foreground. They're going to be discarded if it's running in the background. And I guess, contrary to popular belief, it's got nothing to do with tigers, so it's not raw there. So we've did anyone pick up on the not symbol joke? Okay, couple guys. All right, bad sense of humor, I guess. So if the app's not running, MPNS is going to discard that notification. And the one thing to watch out for is the max payload size. So what that means is your notification payload that you're sending down, being data, you do have a 3 KB limit on that. So bear that in mind, that you can't send a huge amount of data. You either need to chunk it into smaller chunks or send down a command to your device to say, call out to your service and get this larger than 3 KB message. So let's do a quick demo of that, and we'll finish up on that. So we're going to use VS 2010 here. We're going to create a new project. And in this case, I'm not going to use, you know, the wizard which we have with the toolkit. We're just going to build it out using the NuGet packages. And these are the NuGet packages for Windows Phone that create those file new project experience. Likewise, with Windows 8, we use the file new project experience, but that's all composed using NuGets. So we start with a blank application here. And we'll hit Package Manager Console. So this is NuGet, but this is the console portion of it. And what we'll do is we'll pull in our first package. So we'll say install package, and in this case we're doing phone, so we'll say phone.notifications.basePage. Right, so this is going to pull down a base page, and this is going to have, similar to the Win8 app, you know, a driver that we click to request a channel and to post it to a cloud service. So that's pulling it in, and it's scaffolding out the application here. So you can see that we get a page which enables us to enable push notifications. Now, for any WinPhone 7 developers that are out there, you'll know that the launch page of your application is controlled in this WM app manifest. So what I can do here is I can say my launch page needs to be pages/notifications page. Right, so now our application will launch into that. And that's pretty much all we have to do on the client for this scenario. Obviously, there's some code behind the scenes, but if you use the NuGet packages, you're going to be able to add this functionality into your application in minutes rather than hours. So we're going to start with a blank Windows Azure project to build out our cloud service. And I'm going to choose an MVC3 web role. Hit OK on that. We'll just use internet application. All right, so this is just the basic default template that Scott in the keynote create a new project and hit F5 on. Obviously, this is MVC3, not MVC4. But what we're going to do is we're going to pull in two more NuGet packages. So we've done the step one, which is request, and that also had the register code, but that needs to go into a service. So we've got a package for that too. and it's called Windows Azure.notifications. And that's going and putting in a WCF Web API service into our MVC role here that our client app's going to be able to call into. So it takes a little bit just to pull down all the pieces. So that's that. And now the last thing that we want, again, is some kind of sample or driver UI that you can go out and explore these notifications with and then go out and look at the code to wire it up. So we use a Windows phone, and I think I can tab on that one, notifications management UI sample. So we'll pull down that functionality, and again, that's going to go and drop this in. This will be dropped in as an have we got any ASP.NET MVC developers here? You got one? So this is just dropping it in as a new MVC area so that it doesn't go in and dirty up any of the rest of your code. So you can see that we've pulled in that portion there like that. So let's just fire this up because we've got 3 minutes. So I think I started at around 6 minutes remaining building this. So it was 3 minutes to pull this functionality in to essentially empty templates. And now we'll see that hopefully within the next two odd minutes we'll be able to send a notification to Windows Phone. So we've got the phone emulator loading up here, and it should also be deploying our cloud project. So let's check in on that. It's going to take a little bit. I think it's doing the phone first. So right now it's just building the packages, pushing down the phone app, and I'll get a head start on that while we wait for the cloud app. Yeah, we can see that's initializing there. And it's called phone app 21. So I'm going to pin this guy because to receive the notifications on your start page, applications need to be pinned. Obviously, for a toast, it doesn't have to be, nor for a raw, but to exercise all the different options there, I want that to be running for you. Right. That's not very fun. Let's just shut down the compute. Start the compute. Okay, let's try and fire this guy up. Looks like it had a little bit of a time trying to get that deployed into the local emulator. We'll give it a shot here again. Any questions while we wait on that? Okay. But, that's what's going into the output here. View. Okay, so my SQL Express has been killed by something that's been pushed down last night. So I won't be able to take this further without reinstalling SQL Express by the looks of things. But essentially what you're going to get is you're going to get a nice MVC UI to drive those notifications with the drop-down similar to what we had in Win8. And that's going to allow you to send out the toast tile and badge updates. So I do apologize for that. It's a bit odd. So let's just look at a few last things here to finish up. Getting started, use windowsazure.com. If you want to trial Windows Azure for building out these services and deploying them, obviously you don't need an account to go and work in the local emulators, so long as you've got SQL Express installed. Given that's installed, you can do all that development locally without ever needing to push up into Azure. It's just a matter of installing the tools. So there was a 3-month free trial here that you can use if you do decide to go and push it up, and it's no commitment, so essentially it's not going to cost you anything to play with this and try and do some of this or some of the stuff you've seen Scott do. Last thing here is MSDN subscribers. You get a large amount of hours for free, essentially, with your subscription. So 1,500 hours a month is pretty good, and it ends up to annually be a lot of money. And there's those resources which I talked about before. So thank you very much for having me, and I do apologize for the issues I've had with my machines today. Thanks. Does anyone have any questions? We're out of time on this thing, but I'll be around. So. Thank you.